Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here, early. Right now at Wayfair, get up to 70% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, holiday decor, and way more. Now is the time to score big, from seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, with Wayfair, enjoy fast and easy shipping, with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 70% off early Black Friday deals. Shop now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
I don't even know what to feel right now on this one. Brian Koberger, just when you thought the evidence was already stacked against him, like an overfilled plate at an all-you-can-eat buffet, prosecutors have now dropped the bombshell that we've been waiting for, that we've been speculating on, that we've been reporting probably exists for quite some time. Now it's official. It does exist. The receipt for the K-Bar knife and sheath from Amazon. He bought it. And that's the end of the story, right? Joining me to discuss, Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor. That's all we got to say initially on that. What was your reaction when you learned about this?
You know, I think I gasped a little bit because I was like, you know, in every case, there are good facts and bad facts. And I thought, you know, he had some avenues to pursue and he's got a fighting chance, just like most other defendants. But this is problematic. This really sort of tips the scales, it appears, in favor of the prosecution, undercuts a number of defense arguments that they were considering presenting, it seems. This is a big development.
I don't know how you come back from this. I'm not an attorney. You are. You've done both sides of the aisle on this, from prosecution to defense. But, I mean, is this as damning as it really it appears to be on the surface? Does anybody come back from buying the murder weapon? Because they never did find the murder weapon. They have the sheath, and all they have to do is match the sheath to being the one that was purchased. Is this the end of the road for Koberger? I mean, what do you do here? What's your thoughts?
Oh, gosh. You know, before this, he had some potential outs to at least consider. One was that they hadn't found the murder weapon, like you mentioned. That's a big deal. That's a huge deal. In a murder case, the jury always wants to see that murder weapon. It had not been located, but now we got pretty strong evidence, it appears, that he bought it. And you know, the inference is it was sent to him and he possessed it and had it. From there, this is a tough one. And it's hard also to argue that things were planted based on this transaction history with Amazon. In addition, the DNA argument that defense was trying to bring, I think, is worsened by this as well. So really a huge blow to the defense.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like everything that they've been trying to argue leading up to this has just, you know, it blows it out of the water. I mean, and even taking a look at that, let's say that they actually did get some of their motions granted, which they did not, obviously. But I mean, even if you tried to argue the DNA, it was planted, things of that nature. How do you argue it when you bought the damn weapon? I mean, that was the last thing before we found this out was, oh, it's the real killer is out there. We're going to find the real killer. You bought the damn thing on Amazon months before. And that's, I think, another key part of this. This happened months before the killings. I believe it was like back in May that he bought this. The killings were in November. That shows quite a bit of planning, especially if we look back at his history of where he was driving around when he likes to look at the stars at night and, you know, stalk girls in college at their homes. There's so much to this. The fact that shows a lot of premeditation, does it not, if he's buying this thing that early? I mean, can they argue, well, he bought it because he liked the knife and then just decided to use it because he had it around? Does it make a difference?
It makes a huge difference in a number of respects. One is that, you know, on first degree murder, you have to prove, like you said, premeditation, that there was malice aforethought, that a person planned this out. They had these nefarious intentions significantly in advance of the act they committed. You know, defense could have argued, hey, this person was unstable mentally. They had some kind of break. Things happened very quickly and led to this horrendous event, which might get you out of first degree murder or at least have a mitigating effect. effect at the death penalty sentencing phase. Here, this shows that he was looking into this, it appears, months before this egregious quadruple stabbing. And so, you know, where do you go from there? How do you garner sympathy when the timeline and the purchases and everything else are really starting to add up?
And they, I mean, they've known this, obviously. The defense has known this. The prosecution has known this. It's been in discovery for quite some time. It's just now finally the judge has said, we need to not do everything in secrecy. So they're dropping a lot of stuff. Does this all make sense when we look back, you know, in retrospect now on the motions that Ann Taylor has attempted to get passed here that have all failed? Well, let's try this. Let's try that. Let's try this. And it all kind of keeps going to be a little bit more extreme, a little more fantastical. Now we're like last week, it was there's the third party culprit. Are we at the end of the road of attempts now? I mean, does it show just as we were kind of contemplating, it seems like it's getting desperate. Is this why it was getting so desperate?
You know, arguments about planting evidence are always kind of a Hail Mary. It appears based on, you know, what we know that it doesn't happen very often at all. It does happen sometimes. But you know, you're making this huge accusation that police planted this stuff to sort of tip the scales in favor of the prosecution. How in the world do you argue that this was planted now when you have receipts for buying it months before it's located at the scene of this quadruple murder? You know, I just think that we're getting sort of to the end of the road in terms of outs that the defense can possibly present.
How do you think Mama and Papa Koberger are feeling right now? I wonder what's going through their mind out there in Pennsylvania. At this moment,
I've got to imagine if this evidence is authentic, which I have no reason to suggest it isn't, yeah, in terms of the Amazon purchase history, that the parents are, of course, overwhelmed and concerned and distraught, I'm sure. You know, the father had some significant involvement in the aftermath in terms of driving Koberger across the country. What did the father learn during that time? What did he know? And what acts did he take after receiving that knowledge? That's something that the government could be looking into.
Yeah, I mean, they could call him as a witness in this, without a doubt. And we know from the book, the Howard Bloom book, of he interviewed a lot of the, not the parents directly, but heard indirect statements allegedly from some of the friends of the family. And it sounded pretty damning of the family seemed to already kind of suspect. That's my take on what I read on that book, was that the family kind of suspected that maybe their little boy is capable of this. And that's got to be a horrible thing to run through your mind and go, well, maybe. Maybe it's not. Maybe it gives you a little bit of closure and you're not sitting there like, no, he couldn't go and do this. But, oh, goodness, when you see this now, I don't even know how you reckon that. What do you think Ann Taylor is feeling now? She knew eventually this was going to come out. It wasn't like a shock to her. It's a shock to everyone else that it's there. What's her next move when you got Koberger facing possible death and now his history shows he bought the exact weapon that was used in this?
You know, some of the defense positions, including challenging the DNA, I was in the minority on this, but I thought they at least had some possible traction on that based on how the DNA conclusions were drawn and the methodology used and things like that. But now it's really hard to say, hey, that's not Koberger's DNA. But yeah, he does have this Amazon search history for buying that knife and the knife sheath on which the DNA is located. It's just much more difficult to argue that, extremely difficult to argue planting evidence when Koberger has possession of these items that are found at the scene. And so what is the next move? Maybe it's begging for mercy. Maybe it's somehow trying to resolve this death penalty issue with a life in prison without parole option.
Do you think we're going to go? I mean, do you think at this point, are we going to see a trial? I mean, would the state offer a way to plead out at this point? You know, just basically taking death off the table, but life in prison. Is it in their interest to do that? Or would it be more beneficial to run this whole trial through for the victims and their families. Obviously, financially, it would be a lot cheaper if he just pleads out and then they can kind of end this thing. Where do you think it goes from here?
Yeah, you know, it would be unusual for the state to offer a life in prison without parole option this far along. Usually that's something that's offered early on so that you don't have to drag the victims' families through the crucible of these ongoing legal proceedings that have been months and months and months and months. You know, one thing the state might do is they could go back to the victims' families and say, hey, there's a way to avoid re-traumatization, to avoid, or rather to get closure for this legal proceeding by a life without parole option. I'm not sure the families would be inclined to do that. And it would look a little bit strange for the state to sort of walk back their position in that fashion at this stage in the game.
Another thing I found interesting, perusing everyone's comments on this, as of this recording, this information just broke. The sharpener that comes with this thing, I looked at it, and there was in the report that one of the girls, one of the surviving girls, had said it looked like he had some sort of a vacuum cleaner attachment or something with him. And if you look at the sharpener to this thing, it looks kind of like a vacuum cleaner. I mean, it's not, but I could see if you're just like seeing somebody passing and you're going, what is that? I would probably guess vacuum cleaner attachment as well, which again, it all these things are lining up. I do find it interesting, though, that if he did take the sharpener with him to the murder scene, like, what do you need to like sharpen it up midway through? Just like that's another. It's bizarre, but everything about him is bizarre.
Yeah, and you know, these minor details, observations regarding the identity of the stabber are going to be so critical at trial, because my understanding is that, you know, it was reasonably dark, it was late, it was early morning hours, and that the observations were not made for very long. But there are distinct features. The bushy eyebrows has come up repeatedly. Koberger has characteristically bushy eyebrows. And then when you add these additional observations, they begin to sort of fall in line with the profile of the person who has been charged with these crimes, Brian Koberger.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that was, again, starting to be a bit of an argument of, well, maybe it's, you know, his eyebrows, they weren't as bushy at that point in time. I know that that's something that they were talking about arguing, but then he takes a picture of himself. The next, like literally the morning of the crime. This is him over here. This is him. Not you. That's not him. That's him over there.
Thanks for clarifying.
Yes. You don't have the bushy eyebrows, so you're free. But he takes this picture of himself in front of a shower. Some people are arguing there's no shower curtain. In a larger shot, I think there might be way off to the side. It's hard to tell. But he's taking a picture of it. It's like 10-something in the morning on the following day, all cleaned up. But his thumb looks a little, there's a little friction burn on it. It's not like it's cut up, but it's, you know, it's like if you were, you know, stabbing someone, you might develop a little friction there. What the hell is this? I mean, why are you taking a selfie and posting it on Facebook like this? Thumbs up. Is this like a nod to his incel buddies or something of like, job's done, I'm all cleaned up? I mean, this is, again, it's weird, but the guy is weird.
The government is going to say, especially at the death penalty phase, if they get that far, that this is evidence of a complete lack of remorse. If he did, in fact, stab four young, innocent people, college students, and then it's just, you know, taking a selfie with a thumbs up, everything's cool, man. That is going to stoke the ire of jurors, potentially, that could really inflame their passions in a way that would make the death penalty increasingly likely as these sorts of details continue to come out.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of hate that's going to be, that already is towards this guy, but I mean, to see this, that he does this picture the morning after and he bought the damn weapon. Another thing that they're trying to get passed here, another motion that's been filed by Ann Taylor, And I don't find anything weird about this, but you tell me. They're asking, you know, for basically certain attire to be worn at the trial, or certain things not to be worn at the trial. They're asking not to have the family be allowed to wear any T-shirts that have their children on them, their victims, the pictures, or anything like that, or anything that's pro firing squad as well. Like, no, they don't want anybody to wear, like, shoot him in the head or anything like that. It'd be interesting. Start selling it some merch online. Is that an unreasonable request, or is that pretty common at any sort of high profile trial? Like, yeah, don't stoke the jury. Don't bring in T-shirts that say, you know, burn him at the stake.
You know, I think it's a creative request, because there are rules in every jurisdiction that the prosecution can't do anything that is unduly prejudicial to the defense. And so what that usually means is things that are likely to evoke an emotional response on which the jury could base their decision, not supposed to base it on emotions. And so I think it's actually pretty smart of the defense and creative. I haven't really seen much of this to try and limit those types content and visuals and going to the jury based on the emotions that they could evoke.
Excuse me. I mean, is that a common motion? Do people present this ever? I mean, or is it just kind of unspoken that this is how decorum works in a courtroom?
What they usually, no, this is not common in my opinion. It's certainly not in Colorado where I practice. Yeah. There are certainly motions that are often filed to reduce undue prejudice to the defense. You know, things like if the defense made some, or defendant made some, you know, racist comments that have nothing to do with the trial, defense will file a motion saying, hey, the jury shouldn't hear about those because it's going to inflame their emotions and they're going to base their decision in part on just not liking the dude. Mm-hmm. And so it's really in that same vein, but I think a creative approach here by Ann Taylor.
Do you think it will be granted? Will the judge say, yeah, you can't wear pictures of your murdered children or have anything on your clothing that encourages people to kill Brian Koberger?
You know, here's the thing. The judge likely does not have jurisdiction over the victim's families. The victim's family is not a party to this case. They're witnesses, but the parties are the government and Brian Koberger, over whom the judge does have jurisdiction and can impose such limitations. Can they do that for a grieving victim's family? I think there'd be a meritorious challenge to such a request.
The fact that they're even bringing this up, does that just show us that the battle is now no longer about his innocence? This is strictly keep him alive. And that's why we don't want that stuff in there, because those are the type of things that are going to invoke emotion and really invoke someone to say, kill him versus not.
I think that has to be front of mind for Ann Taylor. And because, you know, things aren't going so hot on these huge issues in the case, sometimes you got to look at small issues and try to make them into bigger issues, because you need to try to find some kind of leverage because things just continue to not go your way.
Well, here we go. That's the latest on the Koberger case. Drop the mic. I think he's cooked.
Craving non-stop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.